Hello and welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker. On this episode, I'm going to be speaking to the co-founder of Waze Footwear, Edward Templey. A little information on Waze Footwear. Plastic-free sneakers you and the planet can afford. A no-compromise, biodegradable, carbon-neutral, natural product. Their ambition is to change the way shoes are manufactured. Their vision is a world of zero-waste shoes. There is a better way of making shoes, and it's scalable. It promotes tree planting and works in partnership with a natural carbon cycle. I can't wait to get into this interview, but before we do, make sure you're checking out menswearstyle.co.uk. That's where we put all the show notes and other articles that you'll find. Daily free content going on there. Let's get into it, shall we? Here's that interview with Edward Templey, co-founder of Waze Footwear. Well, it's my great pleasure to introduce Edward Templey, co-founder of Waze Footwear, to the podcast. How are you doing today, Edward?
Really good. Calling to you from one half of Waze HQ, which is down in sunny Devon. And yeah, sun's out. There's some surf later, so I'm going to do the podcast and then get in the water.
Nice. Is this a regular routine?
One of the reasons why you run your own company, I think, is so that you can manage your own time. And yeah, get in the water as much as possible, both here and in our other base in Porto. So right. Damien's just a few minutes from the sea. So his sea is a bit warmer and a little bit more consistent. Not that I'm jealous.
Now, what are the risks? The only reason why I wouldn't take up surfing, or one of the many reasons, is because of sharks. I've got an innate fear of being eaten alive. Got no interest in that. What are the risk elements of surfing down near Devon?
The risk elements of surfing down in Devon are predominantly entitled SUV drivers riding surfboards, crowds, the aforementioned crowds. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Or risk of dying of boredom from the lack of surf you get during the summer when the storm tracks move north.
So there's a window of opportunity.
Yeah, the window of opportunity is the cold, lonely winter months, basically. Huh. Okay. So we've got a bit of unseasonable pulse of surf, which is why I'm excited.
Now, we'll get into Waze Footwear shortly, but this leads me on to another question. How did you rate the remake of Point Break?
I actually worked on sort of tangentially parts of it.
No way.
Terrible. Oh. It was absolutely awful because in a previous guise, we ran a company which did surf forecasting, so we were a little bit involved in the production.
That is crazy. Well, look, I remember seeing the remake at the cinema and thinking at the time, whilst I was watching it, I was watching the original, but I don't remember being bored. But here's my way of gauging whether a film's any good or not, if I've ever thought about it twice since. Now, I've never thought about the remake of Point Break until I bring it up with you. But the original, I mean, I've got to think about that film. I quote that film religiously, like at least every other week. So,
oh, the original one, I mean, it's a Bible to all surfers live by, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
The second one, terrible. And, you know, they committed a horrible crime with a very beautiful, famous wave in Tahiti called Chopu, in which they kind of CGI'd it out of all recognition when you just don't need to, because it's already the most beautiful and kind of dangerous wave. So that was the point, I think, that the whole surf community looked at it and sort of shrugged and walked away.
Ah, oh, that's a shame. Well, what about the original then? So the ending of the original that we're not going to, well, I suppose we'll spoil for people. But I mean, that wave was huge, right? I mean, where was that filmed?
That was filmed, I think it was filmed in Australia.
But that looked real as heck. I mean, not like the Die Another Day surfing scene that you'll see in the pre-titles, but the surfing scene where Swayze collapses in the wave fold right at the end of the original Point Break. Really, that looks like a real stunt to me.
Yeah, I mean, and it is. Yeah. It's a very genuine stunt. I don't actually know where that wave was filmed. God. I guess it's probably most likely to have been Waimea in Hawaii, and it was meant to be the location was meant to be Australia, and it was meant to be the 100-year storm, but they would have probably filmed that wave in Hawaii. And I almost tempted to Google it whilst I'm talking to you whether that's true or not.
I'm almost tempted to watch it whilst talking to you. I think I will do the minute that we hang up. Listen, Edward, talk to me about Waze Footwear and give us an insight into how you got it started and your journey leading up to it, please.
Well, the whole surfing, being a surfer and being extremely keen on sort of the preservations of oceans and being sort of firsthand and seeing the level of plastic pollution that there is around the world, like surfers are kind of like a bellwether into that, because you're in the furthest reaches of, you know, Indonesia or somewhere, and you think it's going to be beautiful and wonderful, and really actually you're knee deep in plastic trash. So Damien is a cobbler by trade, and I'm a kind of materials expert, and we both love shoes and design. And yeah, we got together and we decided to build this product. And given our previous experiences working for sort of larger companies and larger corporations that really just didn't give a flying, am I allowed to swear on this?
Of course, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I know. These soulless corporations that just want to make a product which sells, has great margin, and has no care for the environment whatsoever. We decided with Waze that we would make a zero compromise product, and that product just had to be plastic free. So we sort of started from that point and then worked out how we could possibly engineer it. Damien had been talking to me for years about this kind of ancient way of making shoe soles, sort of based in sort of 1940s French artisan technology. And this is this lactate heavier sole that we use. And that's the basis of the shoe. Without that sole, we wouldn't have been able to go build up from it, basically, and then invent a couple of plastic-free techniques and a couple of, like, a way of making an insole plastic-free and various other things, thread and glues that we've created.
Right.
So we started off with a kind of 90% plastic-free product when we were sort of in the sort of iterative stages of design, and then we sort of got it to, like, a 99% plastic-free product, and I think that's what I wrote an original business plan on, was a 99% free plastic-free product, and then we managed to solve that final bit of the thread with some great help with our sort of partners in Portugal.
Wow!
And that's it. That was the purely plastic-free product was born and real.
I mean, you've had the idea kind of bubbling away for a while, and then I guess it's a case of, right, now we kind of know the ingredients that we're going to need to make the shoe, but then who is going to make it? I mean, do you then go to production plants and shoemakers, cobblers, etc., and do they then have to reinvent the wheel their end to get this off the ground?
So Damien's been making shoes for his whole life, and he was making his own trainers with his bare hands and sort of your sort of traditional cobbling tools back as soon as he could walk, pretty much. So he's worked for every single large shoe brand. So the opening of the doors wasn't a problem in terms of going and finding the factories. We just had to find the right one, the right partner, basically.
Right. And what was that 1%? I'm curious. So something was hanging on in there that you couldn't quite squirm out.
Thread.
The thread.
The thread. Because all shoes, even the most eco shoes or your sort of things that look outwardly like they're kind of made from braided jute or something, they are held together with the industry standard thread, which passes easily through the production machines and is coated in polyester, basically. So that was it. And so we had to build a thread which was as strong and would go through the factory wear tests, but then would also pass easily through the machines themselves, because if you imagine a plasticized thread is quite smooth.
Yeah.
And so to move fast at high revolutions through the factory machines was actually quite challenging.
Yeah.
And that was an engineering feat to solve, which we did. our last one.
Amazing. Then once you have like kind of the product and the ingredients, do you then figure out design, aesthetics, the cosmetics of it? How does that work, the process between the two of you to get it looking like the way it does?
And a third guy, there's a third guy called Jay who's stand out and helping us with the design process. We had a good idea of shoes in mind. Damien's obviously been making shoes for forever, but also it was a real case of allowing function to inform the design. Because if you imagine the sort of standard way you make any shoe at the moment is you design a last and you support it with basically ping pong, like plastic ping pong bits. So you can kind of do anything you want because plastic is actually a really brilliant material for making shoes. It's cheap and it's flexible and allows you to do all sorts of like funky things. It's just a shame it's so bad and persistent in our ecosystem afterwards. So it is. And again, our second round of shoes that we've got coming out in August are even going further down that line in terms of the function. The design is informed by the function, and then obviously it's up to us to make it look beautiful, which I think we have.
Yeah, no, congratulations, mate. I think you've got a really good product on your hand. It's that kind of look of a trainer that I like, the minimalist, sleek looking, again, not logo heavy, but also once you know how the fudge is packed, so to speak, that it's eco-friendly as well, it's a cherry on top.
And that is the question. It's like getting that across to people at the moment, and that's definitely our sort of challenge because there's so many shoes out there which are using the eco label. And this isn't to talk people down, but a lot of it is just smoke and mirrors, really, in the marketing, because it's very easy to say eco, sustainable, vegan, and those are generally all sort of ways of not saying plastic.
And what are they really saying then when they're having like these products and they're putting their eco on? Is it like 20% eco, 30% vegan? Are they kind of just giving it a nice little logo to sit pretty but pulling their punches at the same time?
Yeah, I think it's just, well, it's a difficult thing. It's not something that I really want to talk down in terms of people trying to do good, because there's so much bad that's done.
Sure.
Much worse. Awful. I mean, there's 24 billion pairs of shoes made every single year. Most of those shoes are made in factories with quite like deplorable conditions by extremely well-known high-end brands that are exploiting people of color, and they don't care about eco. They might make one little eco thing or whatever, but they fundamentally are just like moral vacuums. And so the guys who are trying to do eco shoes, you know, brilliant, well done, let's all make more eco shoes, that's great. But yeah, I there are, mentioned no names, certain brands, that particularly ones that claim transparency, but they will only market the good side of the product. So they'll say we are eco with wild rubber, but right, the wild rubber will only be 20% of the sole.
Okay.
And so if you're claiming to be transparent, you should really say these soles are plastic.
Yeah.
That's like the 80%. Yeah.
See, I saw on the website that you're alive. Well, you had a Kickstarter campaign. Was that how the brand got started initially?
Yeah. Well, that was only, I mean, we're only a really new brand. We've only just sort of gone past our first birthday in terms of talking about the shoe, and we only delivered our first shoes to people in February.
Oh, wow.
After the Kickstarter, the Kickstarter went really well. I think Kickstarter was a really great medium for doing shoe launches, and I think it got a bit exhausted. So I think we were pretty much the last people off the Kickstarter shoe production line.
Right.
And I haven't seen a good one come since then, which has made me feel a bit better about our progress through it. But yeah, it was great. It was a brilliant process, and yeah, it's a really good medium for sort of getting yourself out there and getting yourself known, and people can, it's quite humbling, I suppose, if people are willing to invest sort of over £100 in a shoe of a company they've never met, and a company which is just promising to deliver it.
Right.
And yeah, they did in their hundreds, which was lovely.
Which is great. I mean, like I can talk from someone that's had 1,000-odd Kickstarter campaigns that have never got off the ground.
Have you really?
Yeah, I mean, some of them are a bit kind of out there.
Okay, give us what's the one you thought was going to do the best, the one you had the most riding on?
Well, look, I'm a huge James Bond fan, and I was hoping that if I could get a Kickstarter campaign going, I could get David Arnold to score the For Your Eyes Only soundtrack. Bill Conti did For Your Eyes Only, and it's not a bad score, but I do feel like it could be improved upon, and David Arnold at the time was just smashing it out of the park with his scores for the Brosnan era. So I thought, look, come on, if we can just get £1 million in the bank here, we can just shove it over to David Arnold and we'll get not only a great Bond film, but a great score with it. And that, I think they got quickly shut down, copyright issues and whatnot. Maybe David Arnold reported it, who knows, but...
Oh, wow. That is an ambitious Kickstarter. I love it.
So did you have to go... Did you do a video and a separate campaign and a lot of time was invested in this, I guess?
Yeah, it was. And we did it all quite quickly because we were sort of... desperate to get it over the line because we wanted to be that, you know, because if you're going to put your flag in the sand and say you're the first, as soon as you start talking about it with anyone, you know, someone else could come along and claim they're the first. And even though, you know, it doesn't really matter whether you're the first as long as you're doing the right thing. It was kind of important to the sort of process we were on. So yeah, we rushed it out, and I would have done it with hindsight. I would have done it a lot. We've done it quite differently.
And the campaign?
Yeah, the campaign, the video, the campaign, the creative, everything would have done it completely differently.
Mm. You're filmmakers as well as, you know, entrepreneurs, app developers, trainers, makers. So I guess you have a hand in everything creative with the process.
Yeah. Yeah. We are the process.
Yeah. And it looks like a very honest journey. You are surfers as well, so you are spending time in the ocean and you're sick of rolling up on the beach and, you know, finding Fanta lids in your toes, etc. It does seem like a brand that comes from a place of honesty, and I think that's probably why people have latched onto it.
Hopefully. Do you know what, it's microplastics as well, though. That's like, it's the insidious tiny microplastics you just don't see, which are like in everything, in the air we're breathing, they're falling at a rate of like 120 pieces per meter per day.
Mm. That's the stuff you find in like facial scrubs, right? And
it's the tiny amounts of abraded plastics from shoe soles, 109 grams per person per year, from car tires, paint. So it's all the tiniest, it's the microscopic, almost microscopic particles of plastic, which are clogging up our entire ecosystem. Mm. And they are in our bodies and they're doing unknown things to our bodies. There's a lot of science on it, a lot of scientists at the moment who are trying to work out whether the effects of having all these particles in our body is benign or whether they are, as some suspect, attracting to pollutants. And I've even got a friend who is a scientist who's writing a book at the moment, and she's pretty convinced that part of the reason for people being obese is the pollutants in their bodies.
Really?
And part of that story is again microplastics. Yeah, because it changes your microbiome. And I'm not an expert in it, and I'm not, you know, I sound a bit conspiracy nut talking about all that sort of stuff, but there's a great unknown at the moment around plastics and ingesting them as we do, like a credit card of plastic every year or something that we eat.
It sounds so nuts when
it is crazy.
But it has to have an effect. If someone came out with the science that said, yep, the plastic has absolutely no effect on our bodies, the amount of plastic around us has absolutely no repercussions on the way that you live your life. I mean, we already know that, you know, places like China are refusing to take our waste now. I think Portugal were in the news last week saying that our landfills are filled up, so you and France can sort out your own trash. And we're like, well, we've only got another year left that we can put stuff on landfill, so what are we going to do about it?
Burn it. That's literally what we do.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think we're all kind of scraping around for answers, so it's great to see someone like you tackling it and coming up with something creative like this. What are we looking down the line for with, in terms of new releases and new collections? Is there anything that you have in store?
Yeah, so we've got two new shoes dropping in August. We're not really doing, because the other major element to this whole process is recyclability and not fulfilling that sort of fast fashion loop. So we're not doing seasons, we're trying to create like timeless shoes you'll always want to wear. So we'll never, you know, be like, here's our summer collection, here's our this collection, here's our that collection. This is us But yeah, we are going to make new and better shoes. And the first new and better versions, slightly different versions, are dropping in August. And we're going to have a low, which is kind of a bit chunkier, a bit more sort of streetwear, a high top probably as well. We're sort of in the process of that at the moment. Mm. Basically, and vegan and leather versions of both. There's quite a lot of challenges within the making of a plastic-free vegan shoe, because you know the way you get around all of the pattern cutting with vegan leather is just plastic.
Right.
So we are having to do all sorts of engineering bits and bobs with new materials to try and make a really interesting and beautiful vegan shoe, which has no plastic in it.
Remind me of the materials again. So just what the materials that are kind of in the good column with the tick, what are they?
So the materials that we've got at the moment are really simple in the first one. So we've just got a mixture of cotton and hemp in the vegan shoe, in the Hope. Mm. And then that's mixed up with natural rubber and some a glue made from conifers, which is kind of a glue that kind of has its sort of dates all the way back to kind of the Egyptians, really, were the first people that started doing that. Mm. using conifer as a glue. And then leather on the other side, but a really beautiful, thick, chrome-free leather that doesn't have any plastic coatings or anything like that, which is another reason why it's so expensive. But right. You know, it's a wonderful material to work with. And there can be a bit of a conflict between creating an eco product but also choosing to use leather within that process, and we do recognize that, and that is a problem for some people. Like, some vegans won't buy from us because we also make a leather shoe.
Right.
Our conversation around that is that, frankly, there's just no material out there at the moment which replaces leather in both of its sort of in terms of its function.
Mm.
And when that material does come, we will swap, and we are in process of talking to and working with lots of material manufacturers looking at that sort of stage two plastic free leather. But it's the ones out at the moment, they're just not there. Right. And it's like buying the first electric car, isn't it? I totally get why some people would choose to use these plastic based vegan leathers. Mm. Because eventually we'll get to a non-plastic based vegan leather, we will all be happy with it.
Mm.
But
it is slightly redundant that we have such a huge plastic problem, but yet people are so ardent that they don't want leather that they turn to plastic. It's kind of, it becomes a bit secular in my mind. Like, it's not really solving anything, hopping from one to the other.
Exactly. So the solution to that problem is definitely coming.
Mm.
But at the moment, where leather is a waste product, there's a vast excess of leather out there, which, if you get the right leather, it is eco and it is sustainable.
Are we literally waiting for people to manufacture or kind of invent materials?
Yeah, I mean, there's loads and loads of investment at the moment into that process, and numerous ways. There's mushroom leather, and there's a good few other ones that we're sort of talking with that are doing that sort of next stage. And I think something around the sort of the mycelium based leather will probably be the future.
And who invests in that? Is that government or is that private funded?
Private individuals. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we're talking with companies, say predominantly American companies.
Mm.
And yeah, huge investment is going into it. Absolutely right. Massive.
Okay, interesting. Well, look, I'd love to be a fly on the wall in those meetings. It's like, what you got? Well, I found this the other day. I think if I can fuse this with some pineapple leaves, you know, we'll boil it to an absurd temperature, then guess what? We found the cure.
Exactly.
Well, listen, Edward, thanks so much for taking time out. I recommend everyone go check out the website, because the photos as well as the products themselves are fantastic.
Oh,
Waze.co is a place, but we'll put all of the details on the show notes, which you can find over at Menswear Style. But yeah, certainly look out for the shoes and the trainers that are already out there, and the new collection dropping in a couple of months.
Exactly. Brilliant. Awesome. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Edward. Enjoy the surf.
Yeah, we'll do. Thanks, mate.
Cheers. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Edward Templey there. Thanks, Edward. The website, waes.co, waes.co. There you can check out all the sneakers. But we'll put all the show notes over on menswearstyle.co.uk. I forgot to tell you that if you want to be part of the show, if you want to tell us the story of your brand, you can do. Get in touch with us at info@menswearstyle.co.uk. In the meantime, if you want to leave us a review on iTunes, if you're liking what you hear, go put up a review because I read them all and the ratings are up, man. We are killing it. If I don't say so myself. So until the next time, remember, it's only fashion, people, and you're never fully dressed without a smile.